Hi guys, just a quick one to say that our book is finally dropping. It launches on the 11th of October, and we would really, really love it if you would jump on the pre-order list, which is live as we speak. You can find it on our website, which is dearpatriarchypodcast.com, or you can find it on our Instagram in our link tree, and you should just absolutely do that. Go there, find that, do this. Hardcover, softcover.
Yeah, printing costs are up, so it's a little bit more expensive than we'd hoped it would be. But it's a really great book, and we really hope that you'll take a chance on us. And if you like the podcast, you'll love the book.
The podcast is the book, is the book is the podcast.
It's very social media meta. Accounts.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so meta. We also have something also exciting happening also on the also website. You will see that there are products. So Lisa and I love design.
Yep.
And love old school 90s nostalgia and tattoo art because we are both some inked up ladies. So there's merch for sale as well. We've got t-shirts and hoodies and hats and tote bags and coffee cups and stickers and buttons. If you see something that you would like and you want it on a different thing that's not up on there, shoot us an email at patriarchypod@gmail.com and we probably can make it happen for you. But also buy our merch, buy our book, help us continue to build this community that
Absolutely.
We are building and loving so much. So
quick note on this season, it's mm-hmm. a different one.
Yeah.
It's going to be all interviews because we really want to speak to the people that have made such a big impact on our lives and on our education and on our worldview. Mm-hmm. So this season will be a continuous line of activists and educators.
Influencers, organizations, yep. educators, just people that we really, really admire and
respect
and whose work we want to bring to you because they can say it better than we can.
100%. So we're excited to start the season. Our first interviewee is Uju Asika. She's an incredible author. And we can't wait for you to hear this discussion with her. So hope you enjoy and can't wait to see you on the pre-order list.
Welcome to season 4!
Yes, queen!
Patriarchy Podcast. This is the Gaslit Worker's Guide to Conquering the Corporate World. We are two sisters armed with facts and statistics, and we're destigmatizing the plight of the working person. I'm Lisa.
I'm Jennifer.
And today we are very lucky to have an amazing guest with us. Uju Asika is the creator of the Babes About Town blog, which is a family lifestyle and travel blog for families. She is also the author of Bringing Up Race, How to Raise a Kind Child in a Prejudiced World, and A World for Me and You, Where Everyone is Welcome. She is currently writing Boys Who Do Better, A Hopeful Guide for a New Generation. She's so accomplished. We're so happy she's here. Welcome, Uju.
Hello. What a lovely introduction.
So thank you so much for spending some time with us. We love having guests on the podcast and it very rarely happens. So we're so glad we were able to connect and talk.
Wow. I'm very happy to connect with you guys.
It's great.
I'm looking forward to having a conversation.
And one of the things that connected us is writing. And you are currently writing an amazing book, particularly poignant for Jenny and I, as we both have boys. Mm-hmm. And we were talking a bit before we started recording. I'd like to pick it up here. Is what's your writing process like?
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is one of those questions. I mean, I love it because I'm always completely fascinated by how other writers write. And yeah. I'm always reading, like, you know, how do they make it work?
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I think about my process, I'm like, what actually is my process? Like, do I have a writing process? I'm not sure. I tend to sort of go through like phases. So for instance, I went away on holiday and, you know, even though I was meant to be delivering a sample chapter, it all felt very pressured. So I went away on holiday, shut my laptop, was unable to open my laptop. When I came back, I confessed to my editor. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I have not opened my laptop. And fortunately, she is of the mindset that when you're on holiday, you're on holiday. So I took a good long break. And actually, I think that being away allowed, you know, some of the sort of thoughts and ideas to really like bubble away in the background. So when I came back, I started writing. Oh. And once I started writing, I'm sort of in this flow of aiming to do like 2,000 to 3,000 words a day. So keeping it kind of loose, wow, but giving myself like a good chunk of writing. And just writing, like just, you know, as I say, writing it wild, getting my words down, not even looking at it. So yeah, so now I'm at that phase where I have to now like go back to my draft and open it. Like, have I made any sense at all? Have I just written like thousands of words of complete nonsense?
Oh.
So yeah, that's kind of my writing process. It's a lot of like throwing words at the page and then coming back to it and rewriting, which I guess is where the work happens.
Oh, amazing. I love that phrase you used, writing it wild. That is such a great way to put it. Because sometimes it does feel that way, right? Like you're writing something, you think, I don't know where this is going, but it's going to go somewhere and I'm on the ride. So we'll end up where we end up, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read a book which really opened up my writing, which is Wild Mind by Natalie Goldberg.
Okay.
She has she has Writing Down the Bones and she has Wild Mind. And she comes from a very sort of like Buddhist tradition and, you know, talks about writing and sort of free writing. And I think that really freed me up. Like I read it years ago. I haven't reread it for ages. But yeah, so when I write, I kind of think of myself like writing wild and then like sort of trying to pare it back and turn it into something that someone can read.
I love that. That's amazing. Jenny and I just finished, well, we finished writing our book a while ago. And for us, the writing was hard, but it's the editing that really pulls you underwater.
Yes.
Because you thought you did a thing. You thought you did a thing, and then that thing is no longer there. So the editing process for us has been the one that's really sort of pulled the rug out from underneath us. How do you find that process with your books?
Yeah, the editing is hard. You know, it is a tough thing, and there's no other way through it than just to get through it. I think because like I've had, you know, in my writing career, I've done editing work, you know, I've done sort of script editing, journalism editing, blog editing. So, you know, so I'm kind of used to the fact that, you know, what I've said is not necessarily, you know, what I thought I was saying is not necessarily what's coming across or what's going to happen in the final draft. Yeah. And actually, like when I was writing Bringing Up Race, I really appreciated the editing process because, you know, it was such a huge topic. And, you know, I tend to get very off-piece. You know, like I have all my research and I'm just like, you know, writing away and I like go off on these tangents. And then, you know, there was my editor sort of coming, you know, saying, listen, come back to the core topic, which was in the subtitle, which was, you know, how to raise a kind child in a prejudiced world. And that really helped me, I think, sort of bringing it back from all these kind of quite emotional tangents I would go for.
Yes.
It was like, okay, just come back to what you're trying to achieve. What is the goal? Who are you trying to help?
That's amazing to have that linchpin of this is what you have to have, that core sort of pillar that you're revolving around. And it's so easy to lose sight of that. There were so many times when Jenny and I were writing the book and we were saying, is this where it needs to be? Is this what it's about? Because there's so many things. And Jenny, what was your take on that?
Well, I do just want to hop back to editing real quick say, like, there were so many times in our most recent process where like we would need to be doing a pass to do an edit. And I just could not bring myself to open up the document. Like I just could not look at it anymore. And these were like concepts and things that I'd been so excited about, but it just kind of, I built it up into my mind into something that was so hard to like get on the page. And then to go back into kind of making sure that you're getting out the message that you set out to do, because I think that sometimes as writers, we start creating other projects before we finish the one. And so then you kind of get into the spot where you're like, well, we need to talk about every single concept that we're thinking that relates to this. And so that was really hard for us too, I think, to give ourselves the parameters to like kind of stay a little bit less organic, a little bit less disorganized. And I think that was one thing that we kind of, finding that end point, like when was the book done? That was the, kind of the hardest part about kind of tethering ourselves to a structure. And then now in the editing process, I know that Lisa has, we've had to kind of just say we're done. Like it has to be done now. We have to be done because we could go back and forth on all of these little things forever. And then it's sad because I feel like in those times, you kind of lose that passion and the joy and like the heart pull that drew you to this place where you had to put these words on the page.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I feel like now that we're done with our book, I feel like now I kind of am rediscovering that passion that I have for like using my voice and using words to convey things that I'm feeling like the world needs at this point.
And on that as well, Uju, I would say with bringing up race, because that book was published in, was it September of 2020? Was that right?
Yes.
So quite obviously 2020 was, we're American anyway, I live in the UK, but that was a hugely charged year and a real year of transparency for people who hadn't been, for particularly white people who hadn't been paying attention to what Black communities and communities of color in America and around the world had been saying, and finally paying attention to things that needed to be paid attention to. And I think it's an amazing amount of work in your book. What was the turning point, or where was the place that you got to that made you sit down and start writing that book?
Gosh, so interesting. I mean, I didn't want to write that book in the first place. Like, it was just not a book that I wanted to write.
Yeah.
So there was a relative of mine who had suggested it, you know, based off of like the stories that I told, you know, to my community, the experiences that I'd had with my sons. But for me to write a book about race and to write a whole book, like an entire book about race, and then also just to sort of like stick my neck up and be like that Black woman talking about race, I had so much baggage attached to this. And it took me a while of like sitting down and journaling and thinking about, you know, memories and calling up sort of childhood experiences to really think about the fact that actually this was a story that I could tell. And not just that it was a story that I could tell from my own experience, but that I wanted to involve sort of a multiplicity of people's, you know, lives and conversations and, you know, the stories that they'd had from when they were children, or the experiences that they'd had with their children, you know, who had racialized identities or who had never had to think about race, you know. So that for me was when I got quite excited about writing it, you know, was thinking about telling my story and then giving a platform to other people to sort of share their experiences as well.
Yes.
And did you feel in that time that, well, were there people that you spoke with that you had a very different expectation of the conversation going in?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to not really have expectations before, you know, I asked sort of quite similar questions of most of the contributors. And then some of them, you know, obviously the conversation would sort of take a different direction. And those, I think, were some of the best interviews when it just, you know, they started sort of digging deep into memories that they might have forgotten, or things that were painful, or sort of things that were quite transformative for them. So I tried not to have expectations, but I did, you know, I did sort of have a lot of surprises, and there were a lot of emotions. Some of it for me was the humor, you know. We laughed a lot, you know, when you're talking about such a sort of big thorny topic as race. You know, very often it's around trauma and it's around sort of misery and all of that. But actually there was a lot of room and space for just like humor, you know, like comical reflections and, you know, crazy anecdotes. And I tried to sort of put some humor into my writing as well. I mean, I know that people have said to me that, you know, there are parts of the book that made them sort of chuckle or laugh out loud as well, which I really appreciate, because, you know, that's the thing. I think to be able to have these conversations, you can't always have it sort of spinning around trauma and, you know, the deep, deep work. Sometimes it has to be a bit lighthearted as well.
Mm-hmm. And that process, you said you were, when you were thinking in the sort of nascent stages of thinking of how to write this book and what it was going to be like, and there was that, you said you mentioned being fearful of having to stick, I think your words were to stick your head up. Is that something that carried through the writing process? Did it go once you'd started really getting into it, or did it have flashes where it kind of peaked and then troughed, and then like right before the book was published, it peaked again or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the peaks and the troughs, the sort of, and I still have that to this day, because obviously since writing the book, now I do a lot of speaking. You know, I'm invited to sort of speak to like schools and organizations and all this stuff, and you know, in some ways I'm living out my worst nightmare. Yeah, I always say, and I, you know, I tell people I'm up front, you know, sometimes when I'm doing a talk, I say, listen, I'm an introvert, and, you know, I'd really rather be like curled up in a sofa under a blanket with like hot chocolate and a book. I am in front of 500 people talking about race, a book that I never planned to write. But actually, not only am I very proud of it, but I'm also, you know, there's a phrase that I would tell myself, and, you know, and I shared it with people, and, you know, that phrase is basically that this work is more important than your discomfort. And it's something that I sort of, you know, it's like a little personal mantra. But it's something that I say to people as well, you know, for instance, when you're talking about race, or you're trying to open up a conversation with your child about race, and yes, it is really uncomfortable, but guess what? This work is more important than your discomfort. So it's really about sort of not centering yourself too much. You know? That's what I try to do. You know, I might be sort of the whatever keynote speaker, but I'm not trying to center myself too much, you know, because it's about the work.
You're almost like a conduit through which the conversation takes place. It's not about you. It's about having that conversation and getting, especially with children, getting those critical thought processes in place of looking at the world with eyes that are expecting equity. And when they don't see that, that they need to speak up about it and not be quiet about it, and that they have to be emboldened to speak. I love that idea of the work is more important. I'm going to write that somewhere and stick it up. I love that. I just think for all social justice issues, that is the mantra, right? I'm sorry, you're uncomfortable, but this is more important.
This is more important, but it's not just social justice. It is, you know, it comes back to creativity as well. You know, I think as creatives, as a writer, as somebody who uses their voice, you're going to come up against so much discomfort all of the time, you know, and it doesn't end. You know, I'm on like, what is it, my third book, and I'm just as uncomfortable, if not even more uncomfortable than I was with my first. But I know that there's something important that I need to sort of share. And so, yeah, just got to crack on.
Just move. And how do you move through that discomfort? Do you have mechanisms in place that help you when you're trying to move through it, or are you just sitting with it and acknowledging that it's just going to happen?
Yeah, I think sometimes it is just about just acknowledging it and saying, okay, you know, I understand that I'm not comfortable with this, but I have to sort of sometimes interrogate that discomfort, like what exactly is making me so uncomfortable here. And a lot of the times it's about feeling exposed, isn't it? It's about feeling vulnerable. You know, sometimes it's just the basics of like, oh my gosh, I have to do another talk, or I have to sort of stand up again and, you know, stake my claim on this particular issue, and you know, who knows what the feedback will be and who knows what the response will be and all of that. But you know, half the time it's just like, just relax, you've done this before, you know, you can do it again. And yeah, and just move through it. You know, most of the time you've just got to do it, and you sort of build that, I guess, what is it, the comfort zone. I can't call it a muscle.
No, muscle.
But you know, you expand the comfort zone, isn't it? Like, you sort of you get more used to it with time and with practice. So yeah, it's all a practice, isn't it?
We're very used to feeling uncomfortable and wanting that to go away, right? Like that. We're not all programmed to be like, I'm in a state of discomfort, and I'm going to allow it to be because that's where I am right now. Instead, it's like, I feel uncomfortable, so I need to leave. I feel uncomfortable, so I need to do something, make some kind of mechanism happen to alleviate the discomfort. I think it almost is like a learning muscle of sitting with discomfort. That's a hard thing to do.
But also, as women and girls or folks of any gender or persuasion that are kind of raised in like a service oriented way, like we are programmed from a very young age to make sure that like everyone's okay around us, and that we kind of come second to that and making sure that everyone's comfortable.
Yeah.
So I think that on some level we feel like, if I'm uncomfortable and I'm talking about uncomfortable things, I'm making everyone else uncomfortable, and that's bad, and I'm not allowed to do that, and I need to make sure that like I somehow massage into place this like global comfort to the detriment of my own.
That's very true.
Yes, completely. That's such an interesting perspective. I don't think I've ever thought about it in that way. I mean, I think of like just the basics of sort of imposter syndrome, which, you know, is something that's going to afflict you as a woman or as a, you know, a person of color. Certainly for me as a black woman, you know, I have like all these sort of layers of imposter syndrome. But thinking about that, you know, definitely I am a recovering people pleaser.
100%.
lifelong rehabilitation.
So yeah, there's, you know, that element is there too. You know, how am I going to shake things up? You know, how do you shake the table if you're also still trying to make the table?
I love that so much. I'm taking so many notes every time you speak.
I love that. One thing that this was something Jenny really wanted to talk about, and I just think it's the perfect time to say, is when you're writing a book like Bringing Up Race, there is a lot that goes into that of your emotional, spiritual energy that goes into that. So how, when you're writing something so heavy and important and taking such a toll emotionally, how do you keep your cup full? How do you feed that activism within you and keep you, like, make you want to keep going? Obviously you take holidays and you don't open your laptop, which I love. I love that. but what other things did you have to do, and do you do when you're writing?
Yeah, I mean, definitely taking a lot of breaks, taking breaks from the writing, taking breaks from anything that has to do with what I'm writing about, you know, which can be difficult. Like if you're like, you know, I'm on social media and especially sort of around the time that the book was coming out, and obviously it was 2020 and so much was happening, and it was really difficult not to be in the thick of it all the time. But I'd say that, you know, I definitely tried to have like I work from home, but like my home was sort of a safe space, not just a safe space, but a really joyful, happy, relaxed and free space. which is intentional for me, because I always think that, especially when things are kind of like going to shit outside, try and make sure that inside, indoors in our house with my kids and my family, that we're just like really goofy and silly and, you know, just living, just being, you know, without any of the added kind of weight. And at the same time, also remembering to stay engaged. So reading books, watching stuff that is kind of related, but not directly related. I tell you, when I was writing, Bringing Up Race, I actually didn't read. So I couldn't read any books during that time. So I was like, I'm writing my book. I don't want to be influenced by any other book. So I was like really strict with that. But then I actually did read one book, and that was Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert.
We love her.
I love that book. And she was like, you know, because of her voice and her tone, and she was like my cheerleader, you know, so I would like, you know, get to a point where I thought, what the hell am I doing? And then I'd read a chapter of Big Magic and I think, okay, I can do it. So yeah,
Liz Gilbert's Big Magic is something that I read when we were writing our book as well. And I would, because I was commuting in and out of London going to work, and then I'd write at night, or we'd write on the weekends, or we'd just figure out how we could do it. And I would be on the train reading Big Magic, thinking, like, letting her pump me up.
Exactly.
And give me the tools. Encouraging. Yeah. She gave me these tools to be wacky and wrong and like, and also that she did a Big Magic podcast. I don't know if you've ever, like, if you ever like podcasts.
I haven't. Oh. Yes, I need to listen to that.
I tell you what, she brings on different people to speak with. So there's all these creatives, writers, painters, just a host of creators, stand-up comedians, all this stuff. And they write into her, and she deals with one by one and brings in established writers or just amazing people. Brené Brown was on, Neil Gaiman was on. It was just amazing stuff. And the advice that they give these people who are trying so hard to pursue a creative life, but think that there are all these rules. And that's what Big Magic is about, right? Is connect with the big magic of creativity and don't let there be rules about it. Because there doesn't need to be those rules. And you don't need to suffer. You don't need to die beneath the weight of your own creativity, which I love. I love that.
Yeah, completely. Oh, I must listen to the podcast.
That's so good. Good.
I love that book so much.
Jenny, you loved that one as well, didn't you?
I did too. I think the major tenet for me that stood out, especially with the podcast, was all these people had convinced themselves why they couldn't do this thing and why this thing was unattainable. And so it really was just combating that negative self-talk and just kind of getting to the root of what it is you actually want to do. And then like taking those baby steps, because it's not going to be an overnight success and you're going to have to build things from nothing. But you have to, once you make that map for yourself, I feel like hopefully it leads us somewhere. Right, Lisa?
That's the hope.
I like how you say taking breaks, that, and that's kind of a way that you fill your cup. So how do you, with everything you've got going on with your family and with your kind of all the different pies you've got your hands in, how do you find the space, well, A, to give yourself permission to take those breaks, and like how do you fit them in?
Yeah, I mean, permission is the number one word because I think you have to give yourself permission. And I think I'm pretty good at that now. Like, I don't feel, you know, I can give myself like a complete like day off, you know, during the week and be like, I'm not doing anything today. And I have permission to do that because, you know, like now, for instance, I have like October coming up and it's starting to look a bit nuts in terms of like the various things I'm doing. So like I can just look at that and say, okay, well, I can just take, you know, Wednesday off or something. And that just involves like me time. I think I've always liked me time. I'm very comfortable in my own company. I don't think that's surprising as an introvert.
No. So that's on brand. That's on brand, definitely.
So yeah, just, you know, even if I go for just a walk by myself or like listening to music, I'm a big music head, reading books, or going, the other day I went to like, I had lunch with a friend, and then after that I went to see this show, this exhibition that I've been wanting to see for ages, which was great. You know, I can go to the cinema by myself very comfortably.
Lovely.
Yeah, so anything, you know, just the basic. Netflix.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Netflix binge.
There's also that added element of being a mother and being like, you are, whether you want to be or not, you are of service to your children because they need you. I mean, I think you said your children are that are a bit older, so it's not like they need protection like as if a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old would, but you are still of service to them. And there's something really beautiful about quiet, for me at least, but like quietness, not being touched for a little bit, but quietness, solitude, and just having a set amount of time where you are in charge. You're the captain of the ship.
Yes.
You're making the decisions, and there you don't have to think about anybody else's involvement or anybody else's needs in that moment. That's so, I think it's, for me definitely as an introvert myself, I think there's that intersection of being an introvert and also being a mom and just wanting to like have a little alone time, for the love of God, like just let me be. But yeah, no, that all sounds like really restful, lovely stuff to do. And exhibitions are always good. We're so lucky being near London and having so much open to us.
Oh my gosh, yes.
As far as new art, and what was the exhibition you went to? Do you mind if I ask? Or?
Oh yeah. So it was this exhibition called In the Black Fantastic, which was at the South Bank Centre.
Oh,
and basically it was an exhibition by Black artists from around the world who were using kind of like sci-fi elements, sort of science fiction storytelling, to talk about what it means to be Black in the world and to imagine what it might be to, you know, to be a Black person in the future. And it was just like stunning. I mean, honestly, I took so many photos. It's just, I'm so rubbish with like Instagram. Like, I was taking all these photos. I was like, I must share. And of course, I didn't share a single thing. No. They're sitting on my phone. But it's like, it's these incredible sort of like sculptures and installations and like short sort of animated films. And it was just, it was mind blowing. It had really good reviews as well. It's one of those things that I covered on my blog, but I'm really happy that I made it, because what happens is I tend to like put a lot of stuff on my blog, and then I find out that these days I don't even get to it. You know, like back in the day when my kids were younger, we sort of would run around town like doing practically everything. But now they don't want to go anywhere. They're like, go away, mum. So it's just like me thinking of, can I like make time to see this or do that? And I was really pleased I got to see it just before it closed.
There was one I wanted to see called Feminine Power, which was at the British Museum.
Yes.
And I took a picture of it because I saw it on the tube. I took a picture of it. This was back in May, I think I took a picture of it. And it ran until the 25th of September, which was a couple of days ago. And I never made it. So this is what happens to me. I take pictures and go, I'm doing that. I'm going to take myself into London. I'm going to look at that. Because apparently it was an amazing exhibition.
Yeah.
And I just, nope, I missed it.
There
was another one I missed out on, Althea McNish, who's an amazing designer. And that I showed up 2 days late for that one. So I'm perpetually running late for all these amazing things. Oh, well.
It's difficult, isn't it? There's so much happening, and you have to sort of like, I guess, get over the like, what is it, the FOMO of not making it to all these various things that you imagine that you can you can squeeze into your schedule and hope that you'll get to something at some point.
At one point, I will. I'm going to try and get to the Black Fantastic because
oh no, that's finished.
Oh no, it's over.
Oh no.
I looked it up because I was going to tell you you had to go because it looks incredible, but it ended the 18th of September. So it's right in line with all of your things.
That's all right. Yeah. So I've missed everything I wanted to see in the last week. So that's good. That makes me feel good. Oh well,
there will be more. There's always more.
There is. That's a great thing about living around a big city is you get so much that comes through and that you can learn, and it's just so lovely. But
so now that you've kind of taken this left turn with your career with writing the books, and now, and I know you're kind of in the midst of the project right now. What are you hoping for next? Do you want to kind of continue in the same ilk with the books that you're writing now that you're kind of in it, or is there a different direction that you're interested in?
Yeah, I think, I mean, right now I'm like just focused, because I'm sure you're the same. Mm. I always have about 25,000 creative projects that I want to do, for like, you know, 100,000 ideas that seem like absolutely fascinating, and you know, let me just try and do it. Especially when I've got a deadline, then it's like, oh, but this other idea looks so great, let me do that. So right now I'm just very much in like, okay, I need to just finish this book, and then after that, I mean, I've been talking about launching a podcast since bringing up race, and it's gotten to the point where I'm now embarrassed because I'm pretty sure last year I was like, yes, and I'll be launching my podcast soon, and then when I you know, was talking to my new editor about this book on boys, and you know, they were like, would you be interested in launching a podcast, because it would be great, and I was like, yes, that would be fantastic.
Please, can
I will
you help
do
me?
That
Please, can you
so it, is, it is something that I'm, you know, I want, and I'm like, okay, once I've written this book, then I can like focus on sort of launching a podcast around these kinds of topics.
There's so much to be said. There's so much to be said.
There's so much to be said. Yeah.
You write a book and you try and include all of the facets and all of the things that makes sense in the book, but there's so much that you can't go into, and it just makes you just think how... I think that's why Liz Gilbert did the Big Magic podcast, because she said when I was done writing the book, the subject wasn't done with me. I wasn't done talking about it. There was more that was being sent through me that I needed to share, and I love that idea of just something not being done with you yet. It's still got you. You're still gonna share it and be the conduit and have these conversations with different people, and what do you think and how do you see the world, and it's just, there's so many facets you can't cover in a single static book, and a podcast is great for that.
And I feel like in conversation too, you uncover so much, because as you're talking, you're kind of working it around in your mind, and I feel like every time we have a podcast, and especially today, since I have like almost a page of notes now, just all of these epiphanies about different things that you're trying to work out kind of subconsciously and not even realizing that it's kind of part of the turmoil of your mind.
Yeah,
so,
100%.
So sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just saying, I just love having the conversations, and yes, I think a podcast really lends itself to that. I appreciate being on your podcast for that reason.
Well, you are 100% welcome back anytime, because this is such a lovely conversation to have. I feel like we could talk for hours, but obviously we all have children and we all have things we need to do, but it's just been wonderful. I mean, Jenny, were you going to ask something? Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt
you. Well, no, that's fine. So actually, this is everything's perfectly coming to a nice little head. So we like to talk about, what do we call it, Lisa? I don't remember.
Okay, so there's a podcast about The
Good Place.
About The Good Place, which is a show I really love. And one of the things that they did at the end of their podcast for the show is they talked about what's good, because they're talking about stuff that is philosophically quite heavy. They're talking about the show itself, which is lighthearted, but also the concepts behind it can be quite heavy. And there are things that have to be really talked about and felt deeply. And so they always end it with what's good. And I love, because on the podcast, we do talk about a lot of obstacles. We talk about a lot of inequity, and we talk a lot about, we have hard conversations, which we like to have anyway.
But it's always nice to end with what's good for us and what brings joy to us. And it's always different. So I guess the question is, what's good for you?
What's good for me? Well, I mean, first of all, I love The Good Place as well.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I watched it with my eldest, you know, all the way till it finished.
Oh. Did you just cry the whole last season? Oh, I just cried.
It's a brilliant show. It's, you know, so clever and funny and warm. And
loving. And loving.
Yeah, really loving. So add that to my good list.
Oh,
and yeah, and there's a lot. I think there's quite a few shows like that, like Ted Lasso.
Oh, so sweet. That show.
Completely love that show. This Is Us, which is just one of my favorites, and another of the shows that
Everyone talks about it, and I've just never watched it. But I'm
just
going
to. Weepy. Oh, no. It is a weepy. I mean, prepare yourself because you will cry. Like every episode is just like tears.
Oh, yep. Okay.
It's so well done, and covers so many sort of elements that actually, I think when I was writing my book, I was like, you know, I want to capture that kind of feel of This Is Us with bringing up race because,
you know,
it's like really. It's just so much empathy, I think, in the show, and that's really what I wanted to have in my book. Yeah, what brings me joy is like I said, music. You know, I play music every day.
Anything in particular that you like, or you mix bag, or?
Oh, I'm a total mixed bag. I mean, I definitely, you know, I listen to a lot of, I would say, like, old school hip hop and R&B. I listen to deep house. I listen to Afrobeat. I listen to sometimes a bit of classical. Like I just mix it up. I have a lot of playlists and I'm always dancing. You know, I dance so much that like, it's funny. Like if you see me, like I'm just like there dancing and my kids just ignoring me. Because they've grown up with it, with me like sort of dancing around them. So they just sit there ignoring me while I'm like having like a one woman.
Does your husband disco dance with you, or do you just dance?
He doesn't. He just kind of ignores me at all.
Okay.
He says, you know, it's nothing. It's like part of the course, me dancing while everyone's sort of on their phones.
I love that so much. I dance all the time, and I make them get up and dance with me because they're still young enough that I can make them do it. And the 2-year-old will always dance, but. I honestly feel like dancing just, it's such a, it just changes your mood. You cannot be mad in dancing.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be angry. And in fact, actually, my eldest is very much like me. So he will also just like come into the room dancing. Or in fact, today when I opened the doors, he came back from school, he was dancing right outside the door.
What joyful thing. And I think what a lovely, joyful memory for your kids of you.
Yes.
That you growing up, you had music that you loved to dance to, and it was you were always dancing. I love that memory. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, because it makes me think of my mom was a dancer as well.
There you go.
And so she used to, so we grew up with like our house was full of music and my mom was, you know, she would dance. And that is one of my strongest memories of her. So
what a beautiful memory to have.
Pass that on.
You have. Well, it sounds like you have. I think that's amazing. And anytime a child comes home from school and is in a good enough mood to be dancing as you open the door, that's a win, right?
That is a win, yes, 100%.
So as we kind of like wrap up our lovely chat with you, and like Lisa said, I feel like we could talk for 3 more hours.
Yeah.
But how can we support you? Like, how can we plug you? Do you want to share your social? Should people follow your podcast? Should people...
No podcast yet, but soon.
I mean, follow your blog.
Podcast.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be.
There you go.
That was the universe. I was the conduit.
Yes, do follow my podcast that is not yet. That is coming soon. You can follow me at Babes About Town on social media. That's what I am everywhere, basically Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And my books, you know, my book Bringing Up Race is out, and also my picture book, which is a lovely, 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 lovely book. you know, I can't sing its praises enough. And I can do that because, you know, it's partly my book, but it partly belongs to the illustrator, Jenny Poe, who just like created magic for me. So yes, the picture book is out and it's gorgeous and it's a lovely sort of Christmas gift as well.
Amazing. Well, we'll put links to everything in the show notes as well so people can go straight to bookshop.org and order it from their nearest individually owned bookshop instead of feeding the giants. We can feed unique and independent bookshops because that's always fun. Fantastic. As well. But yeah, this is amazing. Oh, just thank you so much for your time. It's been such a lovely conversation.
Oh, thank both of you. Yeah, it's been really great to chat with you.
Well, we'll do it again sometime, I guess.
Yes, for sure. I think definitely. And also whenever the next book comes out, I would love to come back and we can drill down on like how to raise boys.
Oh, I would love that. Oh, I would love that. That would be amazing. We need help anyway, so if you could give us some help.
We all need help. I need help. I'm writing the book and I need a lot of help.
Oh, fantastic.
So what are you thinking for your when are you supposed to be done entering into the editing phase of things?
Oh, gosh. Well, in terms of editing and all of that, I don't know. Like, my first draft deadline is end of next month.
Oh, so, yes. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's why your October's so busy. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, good.
Do you ever just pick yourself up and go and, like, have, like, a little mini solo writing retreat? Do you have to do that sometimes?
This is my plan right now. Oh, like I've been researching all these different places and one of my friends actually, she just sent a thing because she has a place in Suffolk that she wants to open up for writing retreats. So I was
my gosh.
Get some mates rates for that. That would be great.
Keep us posted on when that opens.
Please. I will come. I'll be there every weekend. Oh, amazing. Yeah. Udo, thank you again so much. And
thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Take care.